I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Batter up.
Hello, Mets fans. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 64 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-host, Linda Surovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Kellyanne Healy. Hello, Kellyanne.
Hello, Allison. Hello, Linda. Thank you for having me, as usual.
Hello. And so,
hello.
Yes, it has been a couple of weeks since we have been in your feed, since we are now in off-season schedule. We have ceased to be in the best shape of our lives. We're sorry. But we're pretty much going to do...
It's that time of year.
Yes, yeah,
that
time
of year.
Where you
bury your Mets stuff at the bottom of the drawer. Like the ceremonial burying of those jerseys.
Our emotional and literal drawers.
Yes. Well, I'm still traveling around with my Mets purse, so it's not very.
I wore my LFGM shirt today. I'm still wearing it right now, and I actually, like, someone struck up a conversation with me on the metro about it, and I thought that they were going to be a hostile entity because I live in D.C., so I was prepared for the, because they were like, Mets fan, huh? And I was prepared for the, I know that's not popular around here. And he was like, nah. And he pointed at his mask and he was wearing a Jets mask. So I was like,
oh, nice.
Clearly a comrade. But anyhow, so we're not in the best shape of our lives. We're sorry, but we've got plenty to cover today. Lots has happened. Lots hadn't happened in the first week since we recorded last, but this week, a lot more stuff has happened. And we will be recording roughly every other week during the off season, so don't worry, we won't be in your feeds quite as frequently, but frequently enough. So I think we should kick off this segment, this Mets related segment this week, with, you know, now that we've done a postmortem on the 2020 Mets, I think that we should look forward to the future Mets and think about what free agents the Mets might target. And these feel like more realistic conversations now than they had in the past, since we have an owner who may actually go after free agents. We don't know this, but we know that the Wilpons probably wouldn't have, whereas this is more of an unknown. So, you know, what free agents are at the top of our wish list for this offseason and such. Obviously, the top of that conversation for a lot of people is JT Realmuto. The Mets have a huge need at catcher, as we know. Both Ramos and Chirinos, as Kellyanne pointed out earlier today in our chat, have options for 2021. I'd be surprised if either of those were exercised, although I guess it's the Mets, so you can't put it past them. But
Ramos, Chirino, Frazier, sorry, I'm looking at Sport Track right now. Ramos, Chirinos, and Frazier have club options.
Oh, Frazier has an option.
Yes, he does.
Oh god.
I like
my jersey. Like, I was gonna say, leave my jersey boy alone.
Yeah, I know, but I know everybody was annoyed about the trade because he traded more pieces to get him. I get that, but Todd is just where he belongs. It's fitting he's here. Like, a topless team just isn't the same.
I just wish they could kind of transition him into like a player coach sort of role versus
nice.
The player role.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love my jersey, Rutgers man, fellow
He's
Scarlet
so
Knight.
It's amazing.
It's hilarious.
I love it.
He is fun. I will say that. He is fun.
Yeah. I don't mind Todd. But I will go on the record saying I don't mind Todd.
I don't mind.
I will second you on that.
Linda. But yeah, the issue is that the catching position has been a black hole for the Mets ever since the Travis d'Arnaud curse has hung upon them. And now Travis d'Arnaud's hitting dingers in the playoffs, and the Mets still don't have production from the catching position. So they really
Which
need...
I'm fine with. Because that's a feud to Wilpon. Like, it's absolutely, like, I hope it's, like, every home run he hits, I hope it's, like, another twist in the knife and, like, Jeff Wilpon's back.
They deserve that.
They absolutely deserve it. And,
but,
yeah.
The reality remains that the Mets need a catcher, and JT Realmuto is obviously far and away the best catcher available in free agency and is possibly the best catcher in all of baseball. It's pretty undisputed that he is, I'd say. But he is rumored to be seeking a record-breaking contract for a catcher in the $200 million range. I mean, it's not my money, so
yeah.
Sure.
And his pocket change to Jeff Cohen, or Steve Cohen. I just combined Jeff Wilpon and Cohen together, which is horrible.
Honestly, it's pocket change for the Wilpons, too, but they didn't act that way.
That's true.
It's even more, it's much even more pocket change for Steve Cohen. But, yeah, I mean, why not? Like, I understand that's a lot of money, but, like, you know, players talk a lot when they're testing in the free agent market. He says he wants $200 million. Who knows if he gets it or not? I hope the Mets are in the market for him.
Yeah. Somebody pointed out that this is the year, like, whether it's true or not, the owners can say, we have to cut back. We have no money. Again, and they can use the pandemic as the excuse. So there might not be the bidding war Realmuto envisions.
Yeah.
So he can ask for that, but he might not get it. And I think the Phillies already said it's unlikely they're going to re-sign him. So.
Yeah, much to the chagrin of their fan base.
Yeah.
And Bryce Harper, probably.
And Bryce Harper. which is great. Anything that makes him mad makes me happy. But yeah, it's interesting you bring up that point, Linda, because it'll be weird, interesting, whatever you want to call it, to see how free agency shakes out in general, not just with Realmuto and other guys who are seeking, like, really big contracts, who are, like, the top target free agents. It'll be interesting how it kind of trickles down, so to speak, and affects everyone, because obviously the past few couple off seasons, the labor environment has been tense at best, and those tensions have not gone away. The end of the collective bargaining agreement looms over the heads of baseball collectively, and so that's not gone away. So the labor tensions remain high. Like, those kind of, like, they left on bitter terms with that. Like, they set it aside because of like COVID and having to deal with that, but, like, they didn't end it on, like, very, like, they didn't, there wasn't really closure there with that argument that they were having, so that remains an issue. And then obviously COVID screws up everything, because there was such a small sample size in this short season, so who knows how teams are evaluating how players performed this season and whether to take that seriously or how seriously to take 2020 performances and account for that when they're considering free agent offers. So it's going to be interesting to see. I don't know.
See, but the other thing too is kind of intriguing. Is Sanchez on the Yankees? Like, he was awful, and I wonder if they can move on from him. And, like, you know what he's done in the past. So I don't know if he could maybe be had for... But do you really want to risk another Wilson Ramos season?
Yeah. And I mean, I think it was Disha Thosar of the New York Daily News reported that the Mets and Yankees could potentially end up in a crosstown rival bidding war over JT Realmuto, because the Yankees, I think, are, you know, have kind of soured on Gary Sanchez. And so they might be in the catching market as well, given that. And so, yeah, she wrote a story about that, about how the Mets and Yankees might both be fighting over Realmuto, which will be interesting. Usually the Mets and Yankees aren't fighting over the same free agents, because the Yankees are in play for the top tier guys and the Mets aren't. But this year might be a different story. So seeing the Mets and Yankees, like, duke it out over a free agent would be something we haven't seen in quite some time.
I think a good backup is McCann from the White Sox. I believe he's a free agent.
Yeah. Like, I think that he would be the second best option.
And then you could spend big money on, let's say, like a George Springer, or trade for Lindor, or trade for Arenado, or just have pie in the sky dreams. Like, the world is our oyster now.
Yeah, I wrote George Springer down, so like the trifecta of dudes that I wrote down as far as who I think the Mets should target primarily are Real Muto, George Springer, and Marcus Stroman. Those are three big needs the Mets have. The Mets have a huge gap at catcher. They have a big hole in center field because, let's face it, we've already talked about this extensively on the podcast before. Brandon Nimmo, love him. He's not a center fielder. At least last season, he wasn't good at it. So they really need to get a tried and true center fielder. George Springer's out there. I know that he has the Astros stain on him, but so did J.D. Davis, and that worked out pretty well for the Mets. So not as big of a stain, obviously, because George Springer is a much more prominent member of that Astros club. However, he's performing quite well this year, despite, I guess, not cheating. So
as far as we know.
As far as we know, not cheating. And obviously, we'll get into this further in the later in the show, but this podcast is extremely pro Marcus Stroman. So I would love to see the Mets bring him back. They obviously need more pitching help than just that. They need to sign multiple pitchers, but Stroman would be, you know, the top of that tier. I'd like to see, as far as the rotation is concerned, besides Stroman, I'd like to see them pursue Tanaka. I think that would be a good choice.
I see his UCL still scares me.
Yeah, that's fair. But
wait, does Tanaka have an opt out? Or
I think he's a free agent.
He's a free agent.
I'm looking. Hang on.
Come on, load.
I thought he was just straight up free agent.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I thought Tanaka was a free agent.
If Sport Track ever loads, I have a little spinning white wheel here.
I can try to do a little race, and I can go to COTS and see if COTS or Sport Rack comes through first.
Yeah, I think both him and Paxton are free agents.
I thought so as
also,
well.
Also, a Springer comp would be another, well, not a comp, but Jackie Bradley Jr. Okay, here we go.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, he's a straight free agent.
Yes.
Okay, interesting. Oh, this is an interesting list.
There's, like we mentioned on the last podcast, there's a lot of dudes who are, like, the definition of fine after, like, Stroman.
I mean, well, I think Tanaka is more than fine, just health problems are the issue with him.
Yeah.
I think if he's healthy, he's good.
Fine is fine. We need fine. We had, like, nothing this year behind DeGrom, so fine is great.
That's true.
Yeah. We need fine. If Steven Matz had just been fine, maybe the Mets would be literally in the playoffs right now.
Yeah, good point.
A fascinating list this is. I am curious to see what clubs are going to pick up options and what clubs are not. This is a very interesting list. It's going to be a weird free agency.
It'll be interesting to see what clubs give qualifying offers and what clubs do.
Yes.
Because that's another qualifying offer,
like 18. It's 18 million, I think.
Yes.
This year.
Yes. I think that's correct. Because that's another thing that the Mets could do with Marcus Stroman is they could give him a qualifying offer. And then if he doesn't sign with Mets, they at least get a draft pick.
Yeah.
Sean Doolittle's a free agent.
He sure is. That's correct.
Come to the Mets, Sean.
That would be great.
I don't know how good he is.
He might be washed, but I want him on the Mets anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know if they can afford to take that chance with the bullpen they have.
With their bullpen house of cards, but... sign like a bunch of dudes, including him.
Yeah, that's fine. But I don't know if you saw the article today. I think it's from MLB.com about Lindor, and it listed the Mets as number one. It's like, this is weird.
I was like, that's kind of odd. I mean, like, not that I wouldn't love to have Francisco Lindor on my team. God, like, I would die. He's so good. I would love to have him on my team. But, like, the Mets have, like, a kind of a logjam at shortstop already.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I guess you would have to trade one of them.
Yeah, I mean, you would, in theory, if you're trading for Lindor, you're trading one of those two players in that trade. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
But, you know, actually,
the Mets being in on dudes, though, is kind of refreshing. Though.
And, like, hell, hate on me, people, but I would trade either of those two, either of our current shortstop options to get Francisco. I'd do it in a second. I'm sorry.
I would trade maybe one and not the other. Although I'm attached to both of them.
Yeah. But I mean, Lindor's the best.
If one had to go, I would say Rosario.
Yeah,
they're not going to do that because Jimenez would be selling low.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but just like Jimenez has just too much potential, and he's still a baby.
But it's literally Francisco Lindor, though.
It's literally Francisco Lindor. True. And it would also be like that would not be all, by the way. You would not be doing a straight-up trade and be like part of a pack.
No, of course not. Of course not.
So, and I mean, the Mets don't really have much of a farm to speak of. But, you know, and people like to complain about, like, you know, the Mets and the Stroman trade and the Diaz Cano trade and like the emptying of the farm and stuff like that. But if they did that for Lindor, and then, you know, if you do that like a la Dodgers and then extend the man, then it's worth it. Like, that's what you need to do. Like, come on. Like, you make the Mookie Betts trade every time because then you just extend Mookie Betts.
Mm-hmm.
You do the same. Francisco Lindor is a similar franchise level player. You trade for him and then you extend him.
Well, and then also there's reports like, you know, the Rockies want to move on from Arenado. The Cubs want to move in for Bryan.
It's so
and
sad.
I was like, we could dream about this now.
Well, it's sad for those Rockies teams.
It really is.
It's like the franchise player is dead. It's sad.
Yeah. My heart would break for Rockies fans if we traded for Arenado, which is, I mean, I would be sad, but I would
be happy
for
us.
Yeah. Oh, I would give anything for Arenado.
Wait, I'm just like, okay, hang on. I'm like so out of the loop on this. I didn't even realize that the Rockies were looking to trade Arenado, because didn't they just sign him to a long-term
contract? They wanted
to
do it in the, yeah.
Yeah, they did. But...
yeah, from...
they just extended him, but then over the offseason, there were rumors that they were going to trade him, and then they did.
It got ugly. Yeah, it got ugly.
Arenado kind of was, like, fine, peace. Like, he was, like, out on them, almost.
Oh,
like,
man.
Yeah, him and the GM had some words.
Oh,
like,
dear.
You know, so that relationship is, like, pretty strained at this point.
And they promised him they would build a winner, and then they ended up selling.
Yeah.
And he's just tired of losing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Speaking of building a winner, though, there's some early indicators that, I mean, obviously we still don't know. We don't even know who, like, Steve Cohen is going to hire as GM, et cetera. If he's going to keep Brody, I doubt it, but, like, whatever. We don't know what his style is going to be. We have yet to see how his first offseason is going to go as Mets owner, but we have some early positive indicators of his ownership style. At least, you know, from early reports. So two things have come out in the past, like, couple of days. The first is that he wants the Mets to become more analytical than they are right now, which is nice. The headline of the New York Post report is Steve Cohen to blow up Wilpon's archaic Mets technology, which is a good tour.
I said to that, is there anything to actually blow up? You said more analytical, and I was like, do they have an analytics department, like, at all? I thought it was
one dude by himself in front of a computer.
My computer.
That just makes what Jacob deGrom has done to me, like, all the more impressive. Because I think that means he's, like, doing it on his own, or, like, with the help of the pitching coach, and that's it.
Well, there was, I don't know if you read the article, but it said they were, like, somebody came to, like, demonstrate, I think, like, motion capture to them, so, like, they could, like, analyze their swings and stuff, and it cost $150,000, and Jeff Lopon said no.
Of course he did.
Was it Jeff or Fred?
No, that was Jeff. Well, it said the Mets passed. So it could have been both. It could have been.
Because I was reading Fred. I was reading Jeff. I probably was both.
It said cameras were installed in Citi Field for a test trial, which concluded with a presentation to team COO Jeff Wilpon. The price tag was $150,000. The Mets passed.
Yeah. So I'm guessing Jeffy.
Yeah.
Oh, Jeff.
Well, and then also they were saying, like, there's a new app that you can, like, load data into. And it's like, the problem is, like, you need data to load, and the Mets don't have any.
Unless you take the notes from Pete Alonso's notebook.
Pete is their analytics department right now. Come on, let's be real. Well, and also, you know, I was listening to some, like, talking head after the Yankees lost about how, you know, the Rays are so, like, super analytical. But and the Yankees kind of, like, half-assed it, like, because then they put Jay Happ in a situation he wasn't really used to. But the Yankees like to tout that, like, they're so into analytics, and this is what the analytics told them, and you need the human element, and all this stuff. So, like, they were kind of going back and forth about, like, you know, kind of, like, half-assing analytics, which is kind of what the Yankees are doing, because they didn't go all in, like, the Rays in. Like, the Rays are used to being in weird positions, because they do it all year, and the Yankees aren't. So, but it's like, but compare that to with the Mets, who, like, no ass at analytics.
Zero, like, asses are happening.
Yeah. Like, I'm surprised they ever won a game ever, considering just how, like, they're starting from scratch, basically.
Yeah.
Like, look at, like, even the Yankees half-assing it still got them to the playoffs. They still had a good year. Well, I mean, they struggled.
I was going to say, you know, aren't they still under investigation for cheating, though? Yeah, in theory.
In theory,
that's been swept, like, by the wayside, all of those teams being investigated.
Yeah.
God, all those teams got... That was just, like, pure dumb luck. Not to even call this pandemic luck. But that there was such, there was a much more important thing that distracted from what all these teams potentially allegedly did or did.
And I mean,
which team you're talking about.
We were talking about this in Amazing Avenue Slack recently, and, like, the only person who is going to face any actual repercussions from the Astros cheating scandal is Carlos Beltran.
Yeah. I mean, they're already talking about hiring Hinch and Cora, like the White Sox. So it's like...
Where was that tweet that I just saw? Hang on. Ugh.
Like, people were going so far as to advocate for those hirings. It's like, oh, cool, so we're not even going to pretend to have morals anymore, huh?
Exactly. And we already talked about how if A-Rod had bought the Mets... Like, he might have hired Jeff Luhnow. There was, like, buzz around that happening. And, like, there's still buzz around Jeff Luhnow, like, potentially getting back into the game. So even he isn't blacklisted. Yet Carlos Beltran is. It's kind of absurd. Yeah.
And Cora was kind of the mastermind. Like, and he was one of the masterminds in Houston. And they did it again in Boston.
He did it with two teams. And he's still going to get a job.
Yeah.
Yep. But yeah, the other indicator that, that Steve Cohen is, like, you know, doing all the right things early on, is that, today we learned from a report from Joel Sherman of the Post, that, Steve Cohen is going to pay, the stadium workers, a stipend, to make up for it, both going forward, and he's going to basically give them back pay from when they weren't, working because of COVID. So yeah, it says here, I'll read straight from the report. Cohen worked out a deal with the three unions that represent Citi Field seasonal employees, such as food service workers, janitors, and security guards, that if he is approved to become Mets owner, he would pay each $500 a month this offseason to financially assist those who did not work a single game amidst the pandemic in 2020, the Post has learned. The deal would cover 1,140 workers over 5 months, so basically $2,500 per person between November and opening day. That's a $2.85 million commitment if Cohen's ownership is approved. So that's good. I mean, like, that is the right thing to do. I mean, we were talking about this earlier in our chat, about, like, you know, make no illusions that he is also doing this because it's a good baseball decision. Like, it's a good business decision to do this. It makes him look good. It's good PR, but it is also the right thing to do. So I'm glad he's doing it.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what his reasons are. It's helping people. Like, people will benefit from it. So, and it's a nice change from the Wilpons basically needing to be shamed to even, like, extend their benefits for a month. Like, when was it? Back in May, I think. Like, they were one of the last teams to say they were going to pay their workers, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. But I remember that they needed to be shamed into doing it. So, at least he's coming out and saying it now, so these people don't have to worry about when their next paycheck is going to be.
Yep. So that's good. Good stuff. The stadium workers are, like, deserve this. they have been dealt a really raw deal from COVID.
Yes.
Through no fault of their own.
Through no fault of their own. And so, and, you know, the fact that Cohen is ending the Wilpon era, like, COVID cuts, just goes to show the benefits of that go beyond just, like, you know, building a good baseball team, the benefits that come with an ownership group that actually has money. So,
see, I was tweeting back and forth with Nick Francona for a while, and I forget what we were even, how we got on the subject or what led to it, but like, who would want to work for the Mets? Like, they just seemed so dysfunctional. Like, they didn't take care of people. It's just, so it's like, who would want to go and work there? Like, even if you were willing to pay for good people, nobody would want to stay.
Right.
And then if they were always walking on eggshells, if Jeff was always in a bad mood or, you know,
existing
about something, then it's hard to keep good people too. So at least maybe if you do have a culture change, you can attract, like, good people into your organization, and that can make a big difference.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
So our final Mets topic, which kind of transitions to our general baseball topic because it's, like, all connected in a way, is so we talked about Marcus Stroman as being a top, you know, priority for the offseason. And there has been discourse today online about the severe double standard that exists when it comes to how Mets fans view Marcus Stroman and how Mets fans view Trevor Bauer, who many covet as a free agent acquisition because he is, as far as the most recent numbers are concerned, he is the best starting pitcher available in free agency because he is the likely Cy Young Award winner.
The most recent small sample size numbers.
Exactly.
I would like to stress.
Pine tar enhanced numbers. As I pointed out to even many well-meaning people who were like, I don't want him on my team, but he's still the better pitcher of the two. I was like, please pump the brakes on that because Marcus Stroman's career numbers are still better than Trevor Bauer's at this time, despite Trevor Bauer coming off an elite season. So even putting that into his career numbers, Marcus Stroman's career is still a better career as of right now. That might change. We don't know what the future holds for either of these two pitchers. But for right now, Marcus Stroman's still the better pitcher.
I was also going to say Bauer this season played against what I would call a really weak NL Central and AL Central a lot.
Yeah.
So, like, they had seven teams in the playoffs. You'd think, like, law of numbers or stats or whatever averages would say one of those teams would have made it to the NLDS or the NLCS now, and none of them did.
Yep. Well, the Brewers set records for offensive futility. The Brewers were bad.
Very bad.
Like, but according to, you know, Bauer, because you made the playoffs this year, that means you're amazing. And numbers be damned. Playoffs, I guess,
make you great.
Trump everything.
Aren't the Astros,
yeah.
I was going to say, aren't the Astros in with a sub-500 record?
Yeah. Yeah, the Tigers.
I hate 16 teams. I hate 16 teams in the playoffs. Like,
it's so.
And also, you get to face the Pirates. The Pirates multiple times.
Yep. So yeah. But this kind of was all spurred on by there was a tweet about someone, and I'm not even gonna like name the @ because it's just the person's not important, and I don't even know who they are. They're some nobody. They tweeted about, like, how they were mad that Stroman was live-tweeting the Braves-Dodgers game, which, like, what a thing to be mad about, first of all. That's
whatever. I know.
All season long, not one tweet about the Mets. Way to support your teammates, although I use teammates loosely. And it's just, like, there's so much wrong with that. But, like, and I'm not trying to, like, call this person out specifically because it is representative of, like, I wouldn't be talking about this on the podcast if it was just a one-off tweet that I saw, but this is representative of how a lot of people actually feel about Stroman, and that's why I'm mentioning it, because, like, lots of people ever since his opt-out see him as, like, this selfish player, and I just think that's so off base. It's completely the opposite of what evidence indicates. And, like, first of all, the tweet isn't even true. He tweeted about the Mets plenty during the season. If the 2020 Mets gave him more highlights to tweet, I'm sure he would tweet about it.
Yes.
But they are, you know, not in the playoffs right now. He's tweeting about teams that are in the playoffs. The Mets are not there. And he made a lot of tweets about the Mets. He tweeted about how, over and over again, about how DeGrom's the best in the game. He loves learning from him, et cetera, et cetera. Linda, you found the tweet how he just recently tweeted about Jeremy Hefner and how he's a good pitching
yesterday.
Coach. Yesterday.
Yeah. Like, yesterday.
It's not even true. He's been tweeting about the Mets. But it's such garbage, you guys, how people, like, say this stuff about Stroman and treat him like this selfish player because he, like, says stuff online they disagree with, but then they covet Bauer for doing, like, the exact same thing except actually being an asshole all the time.
Well, and Marcus Stroman cited health reasons, and he said it was a family decision. He said, and Florida was a concern. And what happened when they went to Florida this year?
Uh-huh.
Two people got sick.
Tomas Nito got COVID and never came back.
Yeah.
Never came back.
His concerns were 100% legitimate.
Yes.
And anyone who opted out, I think, had that concern. It's a pandemic. Ugh.
And, like, that doesn't make him selfish. It makes him a good son, a good brother, a good friend, a good, you know, and even if it wasn't for that, he has every right to look out for his own body, too.
Yes.
We don't know what's wrong with Nito. He never came back.
Also, I was just thinking, like, how Stroman's engaging, like, really hilariously with Mets fans right now. It's wonderful.
It's so good.
He had such a good day. I love him so much.
The juxtaposition of how, like, Stroman has been engaging online today versus Bauer has been awesome and has only proved the point even more.
I was going to say, it was so crystal clear. Like, it couldn't have gone any better. The fact that Bauer was his normal shitty self, like, took today to be his normal shitty self.
Yeah, the events, like, literally happened to converge. Like, they were kind of two separate discourses for a while. Because, like, it was only because Mets fans were, like, coveting Bauer as a free agent that these comparisons were made. It's like, I wonder why this one outspoken pitcher versus this other one are different things to you. And one of them is just, like, edgy and speaking his mind when he's harassing women. And this one who's like, you know, speaking out against racism and speaking for social justice is like selfish or whatever, or like, you know,
like those are
rocking
the
boat and not shutting up and dribbling or whatever. It's like, I wonder why you feel this way about Bauer and this way about Strowman. Can't quite put my finger on it. Anyway,
yeah, what's the difference?
Spot the difference, people. But yeah, so these two things kind of happened to converge, because there was the discourse surrounding, like, oh, you're standing Trevor Bauer and wanting him, well, he's, like, an actual asshole, versus, like, you think Strowman's an asshole when he isn't. And then, like, literally as if to emerge from the shadows and prove the point, Bauer harasses another woman online. Like fucking clockwork. And, like, it's...
I know.
I was like, oh, my God, it's like someone, like, rubbed the lamp and the genie popped out.
From the depths of hell. Like, he's not here to grant you
wishes. I was going to say, genie's too kind of a term.
Sorry, yeah, that's not the right term, but, like, you know what I'm saying. It's like, it's almost like you spoke his name in the mirror three times, and he just, like, appeared behind you, and was like, I'm harassing a woman online. Like, unaware of all of this discourse, out he pops, and so, like, some, you know, like, all off-season, he's been, like, his tweets have been pretty pathetic all off-season, because it's just been, like... It's like, don't you have better things to do than just, like, tweeting at every team and being like, seems like you need some pitching. Seems like you need some pitching at Yankees, at Dodgers.
Like, does anybody
know
what he could?
It comes up very desperate.
It's, like, really sad. And so, like, that's what he's been spending his days doing, Bauer. And then, like, all of a sudden, he found, I guess, like, one random woman in his replies was like, we don't want you on the Dodgers, basically. She was a Dodgers fan. Like, we don't want you on the Dodgers. And he just picks this person out of all the people in his replies saying both positive and negative things, I'm sure. He just picks this one woman who has, like, 140 followers. She's just, like, a random person who just said that she didn't want him on her team. And he, like, quote tweets her and is like, oh, where's the tweet? He quote tweets her and he says... Hey, at Dodgers fans. So, again, he tags the team. So, not only... So, that's a thing I feel like is, like, not being talked about enough with this. Not only is he sicking... Is he using his platform of his hundreds of thousands of followers that he has. He's tagging the team that has... How many followers does at Dodgers have? Let's see. 2.2 million.
Like millions.
Right? I mean, obviously, I'm sure that the Dodgers social media intern is not going to, like, harass this woman. But still, he's, like, tagging the team Twitter. Hey, at Dodgers fans, is Megan your official spokesperson? Should I cancel my trip to LA or ... Please advise. So, like, he knows exactly, like, people who are like, he's not harassing her. He didn't say anything mean. That's not what this is about. He knows exactly what he's doing when he tweets these things. You don't have to say, like, outright mean things to be, like, to be harassing women. He knows that his 300 and something thousand followers are now going to be in this woman's replies saying horrific things.
We'll do the work for him.
Which is exactly what happened.
Yeah, she got death threats.
Like, and he knows this. He knows the power dynamics that are at play. Let's not pretend he doesn't know.
He absolutely encourages it.
This is not just him.
He doesn't care.
This is not just him kidding around. Like, and he made another tweet, like, around the same time that was like, oh, Justin, like, someone criticized him for this tweet that he made at this woman and was like, oh, guys, Justin has spoken. I can't have fun and interact with my fans online. It's like, he knows this isn't harmless fun, and he's making himself out to be the victim when he knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, like, it's not harmless fun, and he knows it, and he should know, because he complained about that other girl, like, he went after her for 12 straight hours, like, you know that you don't like being tweeted at or whatever, you think she does for 12 straight hours?
By you, like, and all your followers.
You can't have it both ways.
Like, he just get, like, the difference between what happens to him when he tweets and what happens to the people he targets when he tweets is vast. It's a vast difference. Yeah. Like, he maybe gets some, like,
fun.
Yeah, it's not fun for her. He maybe gets some people that are like, hey, Trevor, like, shut up, man. But she gets, like, death threats in her DMs now because of you.
Yeah.
And you don't know how many of those are serious.
And I'm just, I won't say who, but a certain Mets beat writer liked that tweet.
Which tweet?
the second one, how it's just harmless fun.
Oh, I was going to say, I'm going to wait.
Which one it is. I know which one it is, I think. I actually didn't know.
I think so, too.
No.
It's not Martino.
No, that's not the one I'm thinking of.
We'll talk about Andy Martino of MetsBlog.com in a minute, but it's not him. I think it's, we're secretly doing it in the chat right now. Sorry, strong radio content here, but, I think it's.
Oh my god! Okay. Oh my god! I was like, wait.
It's somebody. I know who it is. I nailed it. Anyway, we're not going to call this person out because they like, I don't know. This is kind of one of the first examples of them being trash. So it's fine. Whatever.
They've had hints.
But here's the bigger point that's way more important than one specific Mets beat writer is that. The baseball media props up Trevor Bauer.
Yes, that's the problem.
They absolutely do.
And yeah, they think he's edgy.
They think he's edgy and cool. And it's because he gives them good quotes. And so he makes their jobs easier because he gives them stuff to write about because he's constantly like mouthing off on Twitter or on his YouTube channel. Yeah. Yep. And
he's thrusting himself into the spotlight
because some of his outspoken nature, because it's a mixed bag. And some of the stuff he says is stuff that a lot of people agree with, where he calls out ownership and baseball. And when they do screwed up stuff with labor stuff, he's not wrong about those things, but he's also not the only one calling out that stuff. And you guys can choose other people to stan. I promise you. So there's a whole nother dimension to this instance of his harassment, because his agent jumped into the fray time. And so this kind of harkens back to when I got suspended from Twitter for trying to, bring these issues to light, and his really long rap sheet of doing stuff like this is I think his agent might be the person that reported me, and I have pretty strong, I have a strong feeling that it might have been her. And this time around, with this particular instance of harassment, she went in on Twitter and was defending him against, accusations of sexism, correct accusations of sexism from people. And then,
and then blocking them.
And then blocking them instantly. And so Stacy, who's one of the cool people on baseball Twitter, you should follow Stacy. I will shout her tweet in the show notes, or in the show notes in the tweets of this episode. But she Rachel, Trevor's agent, tweeted that her being a female is irrelevant in this exchange, and she came at him first saying negative things to him, and he responded to her. So basically, she's parroting the same line that many of his other stans parrot, which is just he's just defending himself, which is just he's the athlete. He should be able to handle this criticism. This is a random ass person, and you're sending 315,000 people after them. It's not the same thing as people in your replies being I don't want my team to sign you. That is not, they're not the same. And her being a female is absolutely relevant. A female. By the way, anyone who refers to women as females, big red flag.
Red flag.
And so Stacy tweeted, "It's fitting that your Trevor Bauer's agent keeps sticking up for his harassment of women on the internet. It's a really good look." And then once again, they always try to turn themselves around to make them look like the victims. So the agent, Rachel, tweeted, "I guess this is another example of verified accounts harassing non-verified normal people on Twitter," which is such a disingenuous bullshit thing, because Rachel has, Stacy is verified, but she has 8,000 followers, and Rachel has 22,000 or something like that.
Rachel jumped in with both feet here. Don't give me that crap.
Yeah, so it's just
she inserted herself into this.
It's
so
such bullshit.
You're not innocent here.
And the dynamics of this are all messed up, because she has several conflicting interests happening at once here. Because not only, so she's his agent. So obviously, when bad things happen to his image, she is negatively impacted as well, because her income is dependent in part on his income. So there's that aspect of it. And then there's also the aspect that they're dating.
Yeah.
Which I don't feel bad about saying publicly, because that is also available on Twitter if you know where to look for it.
Yeah.
I'll just say that.
That's not a conflict of interest at all.
Hmm.
No. Like, the whole situation is just ick. I mean,
it's so gross.
Me and Allison were talking about this, but it's just icky. Like, it's icky. It's the whole... It's icky. Like,
the power dynamics of all of it are extremely icky.
Like, does she feel like she could ever break up with him? Because then she could lose, like... I think he's either her only client or her biggest client.
Well, let's say. Hang on. I'll do a Google search on this one.
I think she also represents professional softball players, and clearly they don't make the income that Trevor Bauer makes.
No.
So.
No.
But I'm not
kind
sure.
of important
I don't
to
think
her
she
business.
Has any other professional baseball clients, as far as I know.
Let's say. But clients again, represents MLB.
And this is all public information. We're not revealing
anything.
Yeah, I'm
anything. Not like, I mean, like, the dating part is something that might take a little digging, but it's not. It is publicly available on Twitter for your consumption if you know where to look.
And it's amazing.
Luba Sports represents MLB players, MLB coaches, along with professional softball players. But does not specify.
I lament the deletion of my Twitter thread because it was in there.
I know.
And now it's gone
it
forever.
So good.
No, but it's still on the internet. It's just not in my Twitter thread, but it was there. Just, you know, look for exchanges between Bauer and other professional baseball players sometime around late May. That's all I'll say. You can find some stuff.
I know, like you said, like, even though they reported it, they still kept it up, and that's not the tweet they reported.
Yeah. Whoever reported me, the like so tweet that contained the evidence that Bauer and his agent are, if not dating, a little too cozy, was not one of the tweets that was reported in the thread. So that's interesting. It's clear the tweets that they care about negatively affecting his image are the accusations of, targeted harassment and racism, etc., which are all true, but those are clearly the things they are more concerned about his public image with, not his conflict of interest with his agent.
Is just a mess.
The whole thing is, like, really, really desperate housewivesy and weird.
And can I just point out that Marcus Stroman doesn't do any of this?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
there's no ick factor. There's no harassing women.
There's cute dogs.
There's cute dogs.
There's cute puppies. Yes. There's, you know, he supports his brother. He supports
his
family.
He does a lot of nice charity work.
He does great charity work. Like,
he's just generally awesome.
Yeah, he's just a good guy, and he's fun to root for. Like, I would be embarrassed as a fan if my team signed Trevor Bauer. Just completely embarrassed.
Yeah, like,
do you
guys
he's
really
on my
want
team.
That mess on your team? I don't.
No, where, like, people, like, are kind of, like, just ashamed? Is that how you want your fans to feel?
And I just want to point out a specific interaction of Marcus Stroman's from today, because there are so many good ones. You should just, like, scroll through Marcus Stroman's tweets and replies from the past, like, couple of days, because they're all gold. But I'm just personally proud of the fact that he replied to one of my tweets, which is, so, like, I tweeted a thread that was basically, like, I quote tweeted that person who made the garbage tweet about, like, being mad that Marcus Stroman was live tweeting the Braves Dodgers game. But then I went on to say, reasons they don't like Stroman: he speaks his mind and is all about himself, bad teammate. Reasons they want Bauer: literally those exact personality traits. Wonder what the difference is, aka what we've been saying. And Stroman replied to me, "We all know the reason. LOL, it's all good though. I can take it. Death threats and racists in my DMs constantly. I get satisfaction in knowing I'm living a way better life than them. Their jealousy is comical at this point. It's only affecting their own lives." Stroman's Twitter is so good because it's just like, him,
drop the mic.
Him vibing, like Stroman's tweets and like response to people hating on him is just like him vibing and drinking like glasses of wine on his private jet. Whereas like Trevor Bauer's response is to like get mad online and like harass people.
And like, pretend he's not mad.
And pretend, then, like, don't put it in the papers that I got mad. And then, like, tweeting at, like, various teams being like, need a pitcher, need a pitcher, need a pitcher. I'm going to win the Cy Young. By the way, have I mentioned?
Hey, you know, that's another thing I wanted to bring up. Is that why people think he's good? Because he just constantly tells you how good he is?
Well, say it enough times, yell it into a mic enough, and people are not very nuanced.
No. So, like that thought kind of dawned on me today. Like, he's the only one saying how great he is. He's got a tout. Like the other day, he had this lame tweet about, like, how he embarrassed Christian Yelich with a pitch or something. And it was one of those stupid how it started, how it ended kind of things. Because he's terminally online and knows memes. And so it's like, yeah, he has no shame. He has to keep shoving it head down your throat how great he is. So that also makes me think the lady doth protest too much. And that he knows he's cheating. And has to tell you, no, I'm really good. I'm really good. Just pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Because look at me. Look at how great I am. I embarrassed Christian Yelich. So yeah,
and it's a shortened pandemic season.
Yeah,
small sample sizes and screwed up spring training.
Yeah, so that's what I also think might be skewing people's judgments of him, because Marcus Stroman is just like, yeah, I'm working hard. You know, getting ready, getting stronger. I'm getting my mind right. Like, that's fine. But it's not, I'm the best. Like, he'll say, I want to be the best, but he's not telling you he is, unlike other people.
Yep.
God, can we not talk about him anymore?
I know, he makes me so irrationally angry. Like Al said, the fact that the media props him up, and it's just, it's exhausting. Like,
yeah.
You just want to scream, and nobody listens.
And the fact, and like, we'll move on from Bauer himself, because he's not worth any more time.
No.
But the media, to the point of the media propping him up, what makes it, you know, all the more infuriating is that they, like, basically they never ask the important questions or, like, delve into, like, hold people accountable for the important stuff. Instead, they, like, do this fake performative, like, holding people accountable for stuff that fans don't actually care about and are like, journalism, for example. One of the funnier instances of this. We told you guys we'd get to Andy Martino of MetsVlog.com. Here we are.
Oh my god.
So I guess after, so I haven't been watching the playoffs like at all. So excuse my ignorance at this point. I basically get them filtered through Twitter. So the only way I know what's happening in the playoffs, I watched one inning of the playoffs, and it was when the Yankees got eliminated. That was all I needed to see.
That's all I needed to see.
And so, but anyway, you know, the Braves are skewering the Dodgers, even as we podcast. And
7-3 in the bottom of the eighth.
Yes. And they beat the Dodgers 5-1 in the first game of the NLCS. And Walker Buehler pitched, and he pitched poorly. But many remarked on his very tight pants. He was like, apparently he's like pretty well known for wearing tight pants already. Like, he just kind of wears his pants on the tighter side. But apparently they were especially tight during
his. Everybody's talking about my tight pants. I got my tight pants. I got my tight pants on. Sorry, I just had to make that reference.
No, they were basically leggings.
Yeah, they were basically leggings. Like, about, God damn it, he's even in my 40-inch slips now. Get out of my head! Buehler is apparently wearing yoga pants to pitch now, which is fine, you know, fashion. It's called fashion, sweetie. Like, you wear what you want. But anyway, he was upset because obviously his team lost. He didn't pitch well. And so he was sitting at the post-game presser, and someone asked him about his pants, and he was like, now's not the time or the place, man. And he got, like, really mad and, like, got up, which, hard to blame him. But then, like, Andy Martino of MetsBlog.com, like, quote tweeted the video of it and wrote, and I read it twice to make sure that he wasn't, like, making a joke or, like, being ironic, and I don't think he was. I think he was being actually sincere. He tweeted, "This question absolutely had to be asked, by the way. Would have been an indictment on all reporters present if he hadn't. It sucks to do it after a loss, but it was still part of the story. Bueller's answer is incorrect, though. His emotional state is understandable." I love how there's so many layers to that that it kills me. So, one, layer number one, the question absolutely had to be asked.
No, we didn't.
Like, he's acting like, again, like the media acts like they don't actually like hold people accountable for like really for like actual bad behavior stuff. Instead, they like pretend that asking a dude about his pants is like accountability. So like, question had to be asked. Layer number two, would have been an indictment on all reporters present if he had it. What? How does this involve everyone present?
And like I said, because we were chatting about this before we hit record, a woman could not have asked that question without getting absolutely killed for it.
Absolutely.
Like, if there was a woman in that room who was doing her job, they would have been like, oh, she was looking at his ass, or, oh, she only cares about fashion, go back to the mall. Like, she would have been killed if a woman had asked that question. So don't give me that, Martino.
No.
No, that's not an indictment.
An indictment on all present.
Asking about the game instead of the pants?
Like, that's not how journalism works, an indictment on everyone
I think part of him is just trolling. He knows he's a troll on Twitter at this point, so he just does it to get a reaction out of everybody. And I believe his tweet has been ratioed.
Oh, my God, yeah, big time.
Okay.
Big time ratio.
Okay.
He's
still getting like clicks and attention, and in a twisted way, I think it's what he wants.
Yeah, I mean, like,
yeah,
he wants attention, and it's what, and it's also what Trevor Bauer wants too, which is why I like hate talking about him, because he wants attention. But anyway, so the third layer to this is that like killed me is Bueller's answer is incorrect. How can you give an incorrect answer about your pants?
Your old game, Mom.
Like, tight what? Pants. Like, what's incorrect about like his answer? I guess, like, Martino got mad that he, like, pushed back on the question and wasn't like, you know, I've gained some weight since the pandemic, so it's, like, really hard on me to get in my pants. Is that what he wanted? Like, I'm very confused about what's incorrect. Like,
and, like,
it would have been one thing to even, like, I still would have disagreed, but it would have been one thing to be like, oh, it was bad form for him to, like, ignore the question or just, like, I don't agree with his conduct here. But he said the answer was incorrect. And that's, like, blows my mind. Like, what are you talking about?
A player can't give you an incorrect answer.
About
like, it's
pants.
How they feel or how they react in the moment. Like, if we want to talk about, like, emotion and stuff, and we want to welcome emotion on the field, which is all good, fine. But then you can't blame him for getting upset about an answer and then go about a question and then calling him incorrect. It's how he feels.
Like, hey, Walker, what was your approach in that fifth inning there with your slider? Sorry, that answer's incorrect.
Exactly. How is that any different? Like, you might not get the answer you were expecting, but walking off was still a response.
Kills
Part
me.
Part of him is trolling. He just wants the clicks and the responses, and he wants to rile people up.
Yep.
And he did.
Yeah. My favorite gif is the one from Toy Story where they paint over the Andy.
Yeah. And it was like, SMY when Steve Cohen buys the Mets. It's like painting over the Andy.
Oh, I cannot wait until he's gone.
It's so good.
Oh my God.
Anyway, okay. Enough dunking on specific Mets beat reporters. But let's talk a little, before we move on to walk-off wins, let's talk a little bit about the playoffs in general. So, like we mentioned, we've got the NLCS, in which there are really no good guys from a Mets fan perspective. It's the Braves and the Dodgers, although I think a lot of Mets fans are experiencing, like, a weird identity crisis because the Braves are actually the more likable team here, which I hate to say, but it's true. But I think, like,
they cheated less recently.
They did cheat less recently. Although they did cheat.
Annoying, Because then it would be the Nationals and the Braves back to back.
Both the Braves and the Dodgers have done crimes, just to be clear.
Yeah.
In case anyone forgot about that, because all the reporters ask about are Walker Buehler's pants, and no one asks about crimes.xlsx. So both those teams are, you know, kind of unlikable, but I would say that the Braves have, like, you know, from the perspective of, like, the players that are on the team, they are more fun.
Well, and also, I mean, not to circle back around, but Acuna got my respect when he absolutely dunked on Bauer on Twitter.
That was really good, too. That was really good. I liked that a lot.
I was like, God damn it, I have to like you now. This is horrible.
And we already, like, begrudgingly like Freddie Freeman, and this is just too much. No. Can't. It, stop it.
See,
stop.
I love to hate Freeman, but I also really want Freeman on the Mets.
Oh, yeah, I desperately want
him. Where's he going to play, Kellyanne?
I know. We'll find some place.
Like, left, fine. Right, center? Yeah. Like, he'll be your fourth outfielder?
Yeah, the Mets will just The Mets are entering the analytics age, Linda. They can play with four outfielders if they want.
That's true. They're going to be playing 4D chess.
Yes, with everyone.
I mean, obviously there's
the league is ready for this, okay?
Yes, this is important. But then we've got the ALCS, which I think is actually the more interesting series because you've kind of got the underdog Tampa Bay Rays against the villain cheater Houston Astros, which is like a fun, you know, it's a fun series. And the thing that makes me like that series too, above all else, is that it's the series that makes the Yankees fans the most mad, because they hate both those teams a lot. So that's pretty great. Obviously,
also,
I think
Rays getting in on the chef's kiss home run of Brasso.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So
oh my
God.
That was just
good.
A nice baseball script. Ending. Yes, written. I love that moment.
Very good stuff. And I think.
And, you know, I know. Yeah, it was karma for Chapman, which I get. And he absolutely deserved it.
Everyone
but a lot of people forget the Yankees originally capitalized on his domestic violence.
Oh, yeah.
So, they're not innocent either. So I hope he blows every series from now until eternity for them, because they traded him to get Gleyber Torres and then re-signed him. They capitalized on his domestic violence charge and, you know, got Gleyber Torres out of it. And so, you know what?
They deserve any bad Aroldis Chapman karma that they get. So,
yep, this is what they wanted. Go ahead. You can reap what you sow now.
Here's your closer.
Yep, blows that's what you wanted, right?
Every time.
Somebody made a beautiful, poetic moment.
It is.
It makes baseball so beautiful.
Somebody made a video of all the, like, back-to-back Aroldis Chapman blowing postseason games, and it was so good. But anyway, so then we have, I think most, like, Mets fans and probably most, like, baseball fans who are, like, overall agnostic, their team isn't in it, are probably rooting for the Rays in, like, the whole thing. It's frustrating, though, because, like, I'm absolutely rooting for the Rays, don't get me wrong. Like, they're clearly the most likable team here. But, like, what's frustrating is, like, there are no true angels ever in baseball because, as we've mentioned many times on this podcast, because, like, even the Rays, like, they're the team that, like, never spends any money, and they're constantly trying to, like, save money and never pay arbitration salaries, and that's, like, their whole, like, mode of operation. And so it's kind of annoying to, like, vindicate that with your fandom.
Yes, I don't know enough about the Rays. To me, they're just a ray of light in this poop fest of a year.
And the reason why you've never heard of anyone on the Rays is because they don't spend money.
Because they don't spend money. They're also in the AL East, and I don't pay attention to, like, that many teams outside of the Mets. I won't lie.
It's also kind of icky because everybody's like, see, you don't have to spend money to win. So it's also kind of a case for not spending money. And
again, I don't take it that way just because it's been a pandemic-shortened season. And I keep that in the back of my head the entire time.
Yeah, you don't take it that way, but the owners take it that way.
The owners take it that way, which is the most important
Because if the Rays win, other owners can be like, look, we're just following the Rays model.
Yep.
God,
we don't need to actually pay for free agents.
Including Mets fans who are still like rewriting history and wishing that the Mets had hired Chaim Bloom. Like, yeah, I get that. Like, I get that you don't like Brody Van Wagenen. I don't think that any of us are satisfied with his job performance. But if we had gotten Chaim Bloom, like, you best believe Jacob DeGrom would not be on the Mets right now.
Nope.
They would have traded him. They absolutely would have traded him. So, like, that's not, like, trying to raise this is, like, not a better outcome for the Mets. Anyway.
Well, I know the Mets have kind of been linked to both Rays and A's guys. Like, there have been some rumors about that. And, Thomas.
Sandy Alderson's a Moneyball guy, ultimately.
Yeah. But so our Thomas, who writes for us, is taking that to mean they're not going to spend money. But does that also mean they want smart people? And because those are two like smart organizations who, you know, need smart people because they don't have money. So could this just be a hint that they just want smart people?
Yeah,
I don't know.
What I'm hoping. I mean, there's a difference between like wanting to be more analytically minded, which is good, like trying to get the most out of the players that you have, versus taking Moneyball to its natural, like taking dollars per war to its natural conclusion all the way down the line and basically reducing every single player to a spreadsheet. Like there's a middle ground there that I think that I hope the Mets can work in.
And the balance.
And I think Sandy could balance that.
Yeah.
Especially if he's given, I don't want to say free reign, essentially, or get more of a rope than he did when he was working with the Wilpons at the helm.
Right.
That was
like,
the other thing in the Post article that Sandy asked for more analytics and they said no.
And we don't know what Sandy Alderson unshackled actually looks like. So it's like we can't say like, oh, like Sandy's always been like a, you know, a wise spender or like thrifty or like whatever. Like, we don't know what he's going to do when Cohen gives him more rope to play with. Like, I don't think he's going to, like, you know, like, spend short of his budget just because he can, because he moneyballed it. Like, if he gets more money, he's going to spend more.
Yeah. He's going to just go after
the
players
that
help the most.
Right.
He'll be a smart spender.
Yeah. And that's fine. Like, even if they don't, like, this free agent market, outside of, like, Real Muto and Stroman and he who must not be named, who isn't even worth it, you know, the market isn't that strong. So I'm fine if they even play it slow for a year, focus on rebuilding the minors, build up an analytics department.
Seriously rebuilding the minors.
And take
it
from there. Like, I don't know if, yeah, he absolutely did it. And so I would be okay with that if, like, they told me, this is our plan. You know, we want to be competitive this year. We might sign, I don't know, like Springer and Stroman. Fine. That'll win you some ball games, but you might not win the World Series that way. But that's fine. You can build a plan, build depth, and so that they're good consistently instead of, oh, let's just hope we get a Cespedes in the second half and make a run every year. Like, that's not a plan. That's not how you build an organization. And, like, hope is not a plan.
No, it's not.
So, I would be absolutely fine if they just, you know, I mean, Real Muto, I think they need, absolutely, because they haven't had a catcher for years, but, you know. I mean, you can even get Darno back. Who cares at this point?
Whoa, Justin Turner is a free agent?
Is he any good anymore? I haven't been paying attention.
He has, well, this year in the small sample size season, I'm going to keep referring to it as that. He has a 307 average and an OPS of 860.
How many games? Because he always seems hurt, too.
Oh, that's hits. Good question.
Like, did he play 5 games?
Hang on. Okay, let me B-ref this. SportTrack's not helping me on that front.
No.
Give me a sec. Give me a sec. Come on, come on, come on.
150 at-bats.
Okay.
All right.
How many?
That's, yeah.
I don't know what that translates to, but that seems like a lot.
That translates to 42 games.
Okay, so that's a lot. He must have missed, like, a probably about a month.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that ship has sailed. I doubt he'd ever come back.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I was going to say, has it though, if the Wilpons are gone?
I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. I was reading through SportTrack and I find that very interesting.
I didn't
Again, know. Again, I'm like looking, I didn't know that either. Or wait, is this, yeah, no, this is 2021. Yeah. This is a fascinating list. Yadier Molina. Let's get him. No.
Go, oh, God. Why would you say that?
That was because I'm trying to
troll. I just want to troll everybody right now.
Well, did you see that article where Adam Wayne's like, I hope they don't hate me? It's like, you don't get to say that. It's up to us if we hate you or not. Like, what put the nerve on this guy?
I know.
It's up to us.
I'm curious about Jackie Bradley Jr. right now.
He would be my backup if they can't get Springer. I wouldn't mind Jackie. I would platoon him and Mariznick, actually. I didn't mind Mariznick.
Oh, Jackie Bradley Jr. played in 55 games this year. 283, OPS 814.
It's not bad.
He's another lefty, which is a problem.
Yeah, the Mets are pretty lefty.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I'm saying you would need...
is 1.9, but that's BWAR. Let's do FR.
You would need Mariznick.
Yeah.
And assign him.
An uninjured Mariznick.
Yes. He was good when he played. I honestly didn't mind him.
No. My mother loved him.
His 2020 has been very consistent with his career norms as far as offense. 95 DRC plus. Which is, you know, like, he's pretty much an average hitter, more or less. Although, okay. What's interesting is, like, he had a 95 DRC plus, which is normal for his, like, you know, his career, but his warp is 0.0, whereas in previous seasons, he's been worth at least one warp. But I think it's either because it just wasn't enough games to accrue that much, or his, like, defensive value went down somehow. I don't have his defensive stats up. How do I get to his defense? Oh, I'm not logged into my Baseball Prospectus account. That's why I can't see everything. I don't feel like logging in right now. I don't know why it logged me out. But anyway, that's the publicly available stats, but I can look at the defensive stats, I think, if I log in. But I'm too lazy to do that right now. So I assume they must have gone down, but weird season, I don't know. He's a good defensive player, like, overall for his career. Very good. So, who knows. But, yeah, so. We will finish the show, like we do every week, with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. Linda Cerevich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win is Wednesday was my niece's birthday. She turned 7. And then on Sunday, we had her birthday party. Unicorn-themed, as you do for a 7-year-old girl.
Unicorns are the best.
Yep. So we played Pin the Horn on the Unicorn. She had a unicorn pinata. Unicorn cake.
She needs to come to my Unicorn Princess event at my library in December.
Is it virtual?
Yes.
Okay, I will let her know. Yeah, so she had a bounce house. like all the kids from the neighborhood were there. Her cousins were there. So it was just nice to, you know, she's had a tough year. So she deserved to have a good party and a good day. And I think she did. So happy birthday, Emily. Happy 7th birthday. Yep.
To you. Yeah.
Happy birthday, Emily.
Yeah, so I'm a very proud aunt, and I'm a very lucky aunt. She's a sweet kid. So happy birthday, Emily, to many more unicorn birthdays to come.
Yes. Each one unique like a unicorn.
Yes.
Kellyanne Healy, what is your walk-off win for this week?
I have two-ish that not both of which haven't happened yet, hilariously. So I've been having medical issues this year, and tomorrow I'm getting blood work done to hopefully finally alleviate some of the issues. It's going to take another month, but like that'll be like the beginning of the final process where I'm getting off this medication that's been making my life hell, to just put it mildly. I've been sleeping during the day. I've been frustrated, short-tempered. So that's tomorrow. And then Friday is another one. Linda knows about it, but I think we're going to have to post. Is it okay if we post it on the Apoto account?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
That might be next week's walk-off win.
Okay. So that's a pre-next podcast walk-off win.
We have a preview for that one.
We have a preview for that one. So, yeah. Other than that, things are quiet. I'm happy the Rays are winning. I loved how they got into the ALCS. I loved that at bat. I loved that moment. It was a great postseason baseball moment. So that's my walk-off win, is the Brasso at bat in the final game of the
ALCS.
It
was so good.
It was very good.
It was so cathartic. Okay. Yeah, that's mine. I'm done. I don't know what else to say.
My walk-off win for this week is that not this past weekend, but the weekend before, I went to a wedding, and it was a wedding. It was the original planned date for the wedding, but obviously they're doing like what a lot of couples are doing, which is like having a very small ceremony that just involves like the close family and the wedding party, and then next year they're having like the full reception. But I was in the wedding party for this wedding, so I went to it. A very small gathering of like just the wedding party and the family, and it was wonderful. And you know, obviously, it wasn't what the bride and groom had in mind when they first got engaged. I'm sure it's not what they envisioned, but it was a dear friend of mine from college. We had a really good time. My other really close friend from college and I were both in the bridal party, so the two of us were there, and the whole bridal party was there. We got our hair done by one of the groomsmen's girlfriends. I'm actually not sure if she's his girlfriend or his fiance or his wife, whatever, his partner. We got our hair done by her, like kind of we originally had like an outside person that was going to do our hair, but because of COVID, like none of the outside people who were originally going to come came, and so but she did our hair, and we did our own makeup, and it was really lovely, and I had a really nice time. And what makes this wedding like extra special, obviously not just because she's a close friend of mine and I really am happy seeing her happy, and getting to celebrate the start of their lives together, it's that this particular friend of mine, when we were in college, got diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and she beat cancer while finishing her senior year of college, in and out of chemo, graduated on time like a badass, and beat cancer, and now she's getting married.
Oh my god.
So I'm like so proud of Amanda. She's my freaking hero every day, and I'm just so happy to have gotten to stand by her side for that day. So that's my walk-off win.
That's awesome.
And your dress was amazing. I'm obsessed with that dress.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, the bridesmaids' dresses were really gorgeous. And, like, she did what a lot of, like, I feel like what a lot of brides are doing these days, which is just, like, she picked the color, and then, like, we all got to pick our own dresses. And so I got to pick a dress that I thought looked good on me, and I really like it. And it's, like, I remember when I was getting it tailored, because I have to get all my dresses tailored, even if they fit pretty well. Like, this one actually fit pretty well, but obviously, because I'm 4'11", there's, like, 6 inches of extra fabric on it. So when I was getting it tailored, when I was getting hemmed, the seamstress, like, I put it on, and, like, the seamstress was putting the, like, safety pins in it to hem it, and she goes, "This dress is so great, you could wear it again, you could wear it to, like, a holiday party." And I was like, yeah, I really could. I really like this dress, I think I will wear it again. So yeah, that's the upside of having a good bridesmaid dress, is that you can wear it again to other things. But yeah, I really liked the dress too. Like, the Mallory, the girl who did our hair, pulled some sort of devil magic with my hair, because my hair never does anything, and she got it to look nice. And so I'm just like, can you do my hair all the time? So yeah, it was really fun. We got, like, the dresses were kind of like a dark emerald green color. Very, very good. Very fall. And we got matching masks to go along with them. And so everything was great. And I got a COVID test after, and I tested negative. So victory in that regard as well. I am COVID free. I was feeling fine. I just wanted to test for my own peace of mind, because I interacted with some people. So yeah, everything went smoothly. It was a beautiful wedding. She was a beautiful bride. Cheers to Amanda and John. I'm very happy.
Yes.
Yay, congratulations. Congratulations.
Yay. And I always tell her now, like, her anniversary. So her wedding was on October 3rd. And I'm like, now every Mean Girls Day, I'm going to think about you, because it's going to be your wedding anniversary also. On October 3rd, he asked me what day it was. It's October 3rd. And also Amanda's wedding anniversary.
You have no excuse to forget her anniversary.
I never will. So that does it for the show this week. Like I said, you will be hearing from us probably every other week on Wednesdays, our usual Wednesday day, but every other week instead of every week during the off season. But in the meantime, while you wait for the next pod, you can go to amazingavenue.com, check out all of our fantastic content. Right now we have a series of posts going on that, you know, highlights NLCSs of years past for the Mets, from the other times they have made the NLCS. Obviously they are not there right now, but we are remembering past times when they were in the NLCS. So various Amazing Avenue writers are tackling different years, different NLCS years. And so we are in the midst of that series right now, so you can check that out. In the meantime, we have all the regular Amazing Avenue off-season content coming. I'm sure that the off-season plan contest will go up soon enough. So you will be able to participate in that. And we have all of our, you know, free agent profiles, et cetera, coming your way. So check out all of that content. Please subscribe to our podcast and the whole suite of Amazing Avenue podcasts. They're all great, and they're all going on all off season long every other week. And the From Complex to Queens guys are the hustlers of the group and are going to be doing a show every week still during the off season. So you should check them out. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow the show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow Linda and I on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servage.
And you can find Kellyanne on the A Pod of Their Own Twitter account as well.
That is the Amazing Avenue comments. I'm the moderator.
And on Amazing Avenue comments, join us in the Amazing Avenue comments, please.
Fun.
The original.
Thank you. Yes. Fun thread every day now. Sorry.
The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets! And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasts.